What the EFL is the Football League podcast, hoping to be appointed on an interim basis as a podcaster when it's in its late 70s. Coming up, not just a good Friday, but a great one. And some absolutely baffling managerial appointments. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back after our mini pre-Easter break. It is still very much the school holidays, though, so you might expect to hear some chaos in the background as we rattle through some previews of the Good Friday action, a bit of news as well. It's me, Matt, and I've got Adrian Clark with me. You okay, Adrian?
Alec, very good. Yeah, I've had a little break in Cornwall, so I'm ready to go. Let's have it.
Sam Parkin's back with us as well. Sam, how you doing?
Very good. Yeah, enjoying Easter already. Looking forward to the weekend.
We've got an Easter wreath on our door, which is not something I've ever known of before.
Controversial, isn't it?
Yeah. Well done to the marketing guys at Lidl, because they've made us part with £6. We probably didn't need to, but there we are.
£6, that's not a big wreath.
No, it's not. It's not a huge one, I have to say. Right then, before we get into it, let me remind you, our partners Quinbet have an offer where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25. Minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, we're going to get straight to previewing. In the Championship, Middlesbrough and Millwall kick things off on Friday at the Riverside. Borough just about second, but Millwall would go above them with a win. And that, Adrian, is not as unlikely as it might have seemed a while ago, because Borough, no wins in three. None at the Riverside since the end of January. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's been a rough run. Obviously, since they whooped Parkins QPR 4-0, they lost at home to Charlton, they drew at Bristol City and drew 0-0 at Blackburn, didn't they? What was interesting about those games is that every single team let them have almost all of the ball. The lowest average share that Borough had in those three bad results, the lowest was 68.8%. So you can see what teams are trying to do. And I'm sure that Millwall, even though Millwall are a quality team and might want a little bit more of the ball themselves, I think the blueprint is there for teams to sort of nullify Borough. It'd be interesting to see what Kim Hellberg has worked on during the break, because he's had a nice little break, hasn't he? And you know, no doubt a lot of the squad have been around for him to sort of work with. So what's he going to do that's a little bit different? They did switch from a back three to a back four in the second half at Blackburn. So that's a consideration, isn't it? Getting that one extra attacking midfielder on the pitch. But of course, in a game of such high stakes like this, I would still suggest he'd stick with the three that's worked so well for him overall. But yeah, no, it's going to be a great game. Huge pressure match, isn't it, for Middlesbrough in particular? Obviously, the threat of Millwall overtaking them. So yeah, let's see if they can come up with something different. Not a lot wrong with them at the back, Borough. You know, they're controlling games. They're not giving up too many goals or not too many chances, but they have to click at the right end of the pitch. If they're going to get top two, this is the match to start reminding everybody that they've got some really good forward players that can go and hurt teams.
What about Millwall then, Sam? Just a couple of points back, Ipswich sandwiched in between these two sides ahead of kickoff. They were on a great run, weren't they? They did lose at home to Blackburn and then that draw at Ipswich, which I suppose is fine. Do you give them much chance here?
I do, yeah. I think the way they performed at Ipswich should give them real confidence. Could have won it at the death, really went for it in the second half after I think a tactical change at half time was certainly a substitution of Ivanovic for Langstaff, and that's something that Alex Neil's done well across the last couple of games, even in defeat to Blackburn. Changed to a back three in that home game when they were getting overrun, I think, by Blackburn Rovers. Ultimately they lost that game, so yeah, it's not been brilliant in terms of results, but that's the same for Middlesbrough. And I think it's only right that I mentioned that, you know, Millwall have lost the fewest away games in the division. They're one of the best away teams against Middlesbrough, who have got real struggles in front of their own supporters the latter part of the season. So, yeah, I absolutely give them an opportunity of going there and really getting some momentum and trying to get that second position. Something we speak about often on the podcast, first goals. That was Millwall's first defeat after taking the lead in a game, the Blackburn Rovers match that I just referenced. Middlesbrough, They've won 18 of 19 games when they've scored first. So both of them really strong front runners. The records when they do go behind aren't anywhere comparable. So that could be a big thing ahead of this game. And Millwall, most clean sheets in the division still, which I think gets underlooked as well. So they're capable of going there and doing what Oxford and Charlton and some other teams in recent weeks have been able to do against Middlesbrough. So, yeah, it's a huge game, 12:30 as well. So by the time that one finishes, Hull, who play at Oxford at 3 and commentary in the late game, will know exactly what they've got to do. Pressure on these two clubs ahead of that big game.
Give me a nice segue there into our next one. It is Oxford against Hull. Big one at both ends of the table, of course. This one, Oxford second bottom, but only a point from safety. Hull fifth, but only 3 points from the playoff chasers. Oxford had won 3 in a row, but they've since drawn against Charlton and lost to Southampton. Don't know if you saw this, Sam, but BBC Oxford reporting that Oxford, one of a few champ clubs, or more than one, who raised concerns about Michael O'Neill managing Northern Ireland and Blackburn. Obviously, Oxford got a fair few Northern Ireland players, Donnelly, Brown, Spencer and McDonnell. All but McDonnell featured for Northern Ireland last night. The EFL confirming they've been contacted by one or more clubs regarding the matter, but it was not an issue that would be dealt with by them. You can see why they're asking the questions, but I guess it's not something that's going to define their season. But it's so tight down there, isn't it? They've still got a chance of pulling off this great escape, only a point from safety.
Yeah, I wouldn't be quick to question Michael O'Neill's professionalism. I think that's the riding feeling that I
definitely
have
on
just a little dig to try and rattle him, basically, is it?
I don't know.
It's a bit naughty, wasn't it? Yeah, there's no need for it.
I just had a little look actually about an hour or so ago. He took the Oxford lads off. He gave Devlin a little rest as well. I think there's a young lad from Blackburn, obviously, he got on for his first team bow for a few minutes, maybe his first appearance. So a few question marks about that. But Michael O'Neill seems like a very, very decent guy. And I'm sure he's focused on the job in hand at Blackburn. Oxford, this passed me by a little bit. They've not been beaten by anyone at home inside the top 9 so far this season. So this is the type of game which they've relished. And if you think back to the back end of last season, we banged this drum quite frequently in their survival last year. They beat Sunderland and Sheffield United in the last knockings of last season. And they've done so. Me and Clarkie were there for the Ipswich win earlier on in this season. So I think they'll fancy it. They've got great success going to the back five and being defensively resolute on the road, and it didn't work out brilliantly. They played okay. Lancashire did miss a 1v1 at Southampton, but I'd imagine them to go back to the back four, 4-2-3-1, and have a real go at Hull City at the weekend. And Clarkie will come on to them, but you know, they can mix up as well. They can be a little bit more pragmatic on the road, as they've shown against the big guns in the division recently. But I think Oxford will look to play on the front foot. They won 3 on the spin very recently. Only stopped being 4 courtesy of, I think, Kelman penalty, Charlton last minute at the Kassam. So they've turned their fortunes around. They're winning games, especially in front of their home supporters. And they need to focus in on this one with the small deal of Pompey on Easter Monday. Oof. So I don't think a point's a disaster here, but what it does do, it just knocks another game out. And in turn, heaps enormous pressure onto that game come Monday, which, on the face of it, looks like a huge 6-pointer as we sit here today.
Yeah, that is a real ding-dong. It was when these two met earlier in the season. Hull won a 3-2 thriller thanks to a stoppage time winner from that man, Ollie McBurney. They did beat Chef Wed, Clarkie, but they are out of form, and they might be looking at that defeat at West Brom a couple of weeks ago and thinking this is a similar type of banana skinny game for them.
Yeah, you can't. It's hard to get a read on Hull. I'm at this game, so I'm looking forward to it. It should be pretty lively for a number of reasons. Yeah, on Hull, you know, they're in with a chance of promotion, but they've lost 5 of their last 9. You know, it's not great. They've conceded 17 goals in those 9 games, and at least 2 in 5 of them. So, you know, defensively, they've been a bit rocky, actually, yet they've won 4 games. And because they've won 4 games, they're still in the mix. I still don't really trust them at the back. So they're better off trying to outscore teams, really, Hull City, in my opinion. And they can score plenty. So they've got 62 across the season. What's interesting is that of the 62 goals they've scored, Hull, only 7 from set pieces, which is the lowest in the championships. They've really not relied on corners and free kicks. So in open play, they've been pretty good. a lot of their threat comes on the break. 10 goals on fast breaks. I mean, Gelhardt's great in those situations. Miller, the winger, who I like. They're also good at sort of winning the ball high up the pitch. Not that Oxford will play out from the back that much, I don't think, in this game. But if they do, they'll be on them, looking to turn the ball over. They've got some good ball winners. But look, you have to say Jurkiewicz has done, whatever happens, Jurkiewicz has done amazingly. I mean, embargoes, restrictions, loads of injuries throughout this season. And there they are, right in the mix. Two great defensive signings that probably a lot of teams weren't wanting to get on board, like Semi Ajayi, for instance, probably on decent money. Is he on the wane? Well, he's come in and done great. McNair, the same. Paddy McNair coming in from the States. But the big one's McBurnie, isn't it? I mean, he's been absolutely mega. 13 goals, 7 assists. Magnificent. And when I look at their team, actually, Hull, it's now got loads of championship experience. You've got Ajayi, Egan, McNair, Drammer, Slater, Crooks, Gellart, Miller, McBurnie, Joseph, all these guys, Lundstrom on the bench. You know, this isn't a group of journeymen that are sort of from here, there and everywhere, particularly anymore. It's a group of players that have got hundreds of championship games behind them. So, yeah, big game for them. I couldn't tell you which way this one will go. They'll either not show up and get spanked by Oxford, or they'll go and win it 3-2. That's the sort of season Hull are having.
Sure is. Up and down, topsy-turvy. Another game with ramifications at either end of the standings goes down at the Hawthorns. Revitalised West Brom, hosting still vitalised Wrexham. Let's start with Wrexham here, Samson, as we were talking about Hull, and they're both playoff contenders. Bounced back from defeat at Watford by winning at Sheffield United before the break. Depends if you're a glass half full or glass half empty kind of guy on their form, I suppose. Won 5 of the last 7 in the league, but lost 2 of the last 4.
Yeah, I think this is obviously a side that's evolving before our eyes, I think, really this season. I've been really impressed with the type of football they're trying to play now in comparison to maybe the style that got them out of League 2 and League 1, albeit with great success, clearly. But yeah, I think they're trying to add different layers, if you like. I think probably been hindered a little bit by injuries in recent weeks to expect them to be completely consistent. Kiefer Moore's obviously a big one, so Sam Smith's having to carry that burden. Obviously did it brilliantly well at Sheffield United with a goal and an assist, but the centre of the park as well, kind of been scratching my head seeing Thomason, who's a lovely central midfield player, playing wide on the left hand side and doing a great job. But that's because the left wing back's been out as well, the Kiwi lad, I think he is. And then you've got Matty James and Ben Sheaf, who haven't featured recently, meaning that Dobson and Zach Viner, who we've spoken about a lot again on the podcast, centre half by trade, but playing in central midfield for Wrexham now. So they're a little bit patched up and they're a bit light in midfield. So that would be a little bit of a concern going into a game against a team that's obviously got a little bit of rhythm all of a sudden. So will they make it? I'm not sure. I'd probably side with Southampton right now. Maybe they'd have their eyes on Hull possibly falling out. I think that's probably been a narrative from a lot of onlookers for the last month or so. Can they maintain their form? But yeah, Wrexham are just a little bit kind of inconsistent. They obviously won well at Sheffield United, having really not turned up at Vicarage Road against Watford in a game that I really expected them to win. So I think it's probably down to personnel, obviously the additional cup games as well. That Chelsea game clearly took a lot out of them, didn't play very well at all in the subsequent game. But yeah, this will be an interesting one at the Hawthorns. You expect that place to be jumping, and they are good on the road, Wrexham, and they can claw back deficits. They're never beaten. I think that's been a feature of their season again this campaign. So even if West Brom do get their nose in front, we know that Wrexham are very likely to rally. But I'm very on the fence with this game, because I've admired what James Morrison's done, having been very sceptical that was probably the wrong appointment.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Hawthorns will be boinging as much as it will be jumping, one would have thought. Eric Ramsey out, James Morrison in. Took a while, but Nat Phillips, I think, speaking for a lot of the players, and he said they're very much enjoying a more attacking style of play. And a little buffer for them now, Clarkie, as well. 4 points above the relegation zone.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't, because they were so bad, weren't they, under Eric Ramsey, who I think looking back went in too cautiously and didn't go on the front foot and was more worried about stopping the opposition maybe than going out there and hurting them. And what Morrison's done is just given the players a bit of confidence to go and do that. He's kept things nice and simple, positive mindset. Everything's been positive. They've gone back to the basics. I mean, they battered Bristol City. I know it was only 1-0, but they, chance after chance after chance. They were so good that Bristol City had to sack Gerhard Struber. So, you know, that we'll get onto that a little bit later. But that was to back up a 3-0 win against Hull. Before that, they'd drawn with Southampton and at Sheffield United. So they were on a really, really good run. In those four games, the shot count for West Brom was 19, 26, 13 and 12. Now, they're four tough games, and that's a lot of shots that they've got up. You know, they're getting the ball up to the front two. It's basically the big change is they've gone 4-4-2. 4-4-2. Hegabo with either sort of Madger or DK. Madger's been playing the last couple. You know, they're good on the break. They put the crosses in. And they're going for it. They're trying to be a bit more front foot and trying to score goals. Just everything about West Brom is more positive than it was under Eric Ramsey. So, look, if they go in with that sort of mentality here, this could be a really good game because Wrexham, as I've said all season, can score for fun. So, I expect both teams to score here and it to be a really good watch.
Mm, yeah, let's hope so. That's the 3 o'clock, the evening's entertainment. Finishes with Coventry against Derby at 8. We are going to dip into League One next. Imps versus Wombles. Now, it's not a Julia Donaldson story, but the moniker for a very important League One affair. Lincoln could be promoted on Friday, as a hairdresser said to her clients in the 80s. Here are the perms. Lincoln will be promoted if they win and Bolton and Stockport don't. However, a win puts the Imps in an almost insurmountable position due to their goal difference. Lincoln would be promoted with a draw if Bolton and Stockport lose and Bradford don't win. They're on the edge of history then, Clarkie. 65 years since they last played in the second tier, and it is a case of when, not if now, isn't it? Unbeaten in 22, a club record.
It's a magnificent story. And yeah, Michael Scabala is sort of this unheralded hero. He doesn't really want any attention on him. He's happy to just be in the background to chalk off all these wins. And as you say, they're on the verge of making history, aren't they? If they do go up on the weekend, by April the 6th, actually. So I don't know whether that covers Monday or not. On Monday, it'll be the earliest in a calendar year any team has been promoted from the third tier of English football. So, you know, they've got that little carrot as well. So, yeah, look, they've been unbelievable, haven't they? The best defence in the league, only 34 conceded. They're kind of Leicester City-ing their way to promotion, aren't they? That's who I would really sort of compare them to. They have the lowest possession in the division and, they can soak it up. They're big and strong. They win their duels and then they break on you hard and fast, and they can really hurt you in any number of ways. And of course, if they get the territory, if they get the corners and the free kicks and the throw-ins, they can really do some damage there. 25 set piece goals, that's the joint most in the division with Plymouth. One great stat for Lincoln this season, and I think this kind of sums up the organization and the teamwork and how together they are as a team. Not a single error has been made leading to a goal conceded by Lincoln City this season. Just to put that into perspective, five clubs are in double figures for errors leading to goals, with Luton leading the way on 13. So, you know, it's been a real squad effort as well. Loads of goals from subs. So, yeah, take a bow, Lincoln City. Yeah, you know, absolutely deserve promotion, and they've done it, like I say, in a way that reminds me of Ranieri's Leicester City, which is a big compliment, to be honest. It's because that was a great team to watch, even though they didn't have loads of the ball. And I think you could say the same about Lincoln City, really.
Only lost once at home in the league all season, randomly. That was against Exeter. Sam, your mate Johnny Jackson felt Wimbledon were unlucky to lose 3-0 at Stockport last weekend. Came up against the goalkeeper having his best day. Yeah, they've had a steady season, haven't they, back in League One. Any chance that they spoil the party here? They did win the reverse fixture.
They did, yeah. That was a bit of a outlier, wasn't it, really, when you think what came next for Lincoln. Won 2-0, didn't they? Adam Jackson sent off very early for Lincoln on that day. I think they only had two shots. I remember poring over the stats from that game way back when, and something I've spoken to Jacko about, because he wouldn't have foreseen them obviously being this force, having won that game relatively comfortably. But yeah, I think, as Adrian just touched on, you know, Wimbledon won't be bullied. If Lincoln are going to come up against a team who won't roll under, the Dons are probably that. So the results haven't been good, clearly, the last three or four games. But I don't think you can underplay the pressure that they would have been under to accumulate these points and win those back-to-back home games, which just alleviated so much pressure that had been building on Wimbledon and their players over a series of weeks. So I can understand the drop-off a little bit, and it's coincided with injuries to big players. I mean, Matty Stevens is out at the moment. Hippolyte was missing the other day. Brown, who's probably arguably been their best attacking player, certainly their best attacking player, maybe their best player across the season. So he had to patch them up a little bit away at Stockport. I noticed that there was an additional midfielder in the lineup. Jake Reeves has come back into the team in the last few weeks, and actually him coming out of the team and then putting some more energy, the legs of Callum Maycock, Alistair Smith at the base of kind of the midfield three. That was the cue for the kind of upturn as well. So, and they've been playing more football. I remember speaking to him around Christmas time and really struggling for results. And I think he wanted them to, they were going to get out of trouble. He wanted to do it by playing with a little bit more style. So I think that's a credit to him and a credit to the players that they've been able to actually in season have a little bit more pressure, possession, take the ball when you're being pressurized and not just play back to front, which they had great success in the League Two promotion season from. So yeah, I give them a chance here, but you know, Lincoln are going to get promoted. It's just a question of when they do so. Junior Nkeng, young player at Wimbledon. I've not seen enough of him to give you a glowing scouting report, but I know they're very, very excited about him. Got his maiden goals in the defeat to Leyton Orient about 2 or 3 weeks ago. He looks a talent. He came into the side just after Christmas, give or take. I mean, mostly off the bench, but wide player. And I think 18 years of age, but looks to have a lot about him. And if they don't get the points this weekend, I still think they could do with a win. Don't know what Clarkie thinks. Maybe 4 points would be definite. But Luton at home, Burton away, they're the next two. And then it does get tricky again. So if they're not to get anything from the weekend, I would probably expect them to win one of those games just to solidify their position.
Yeah, they won't go down. They'll be fine.
Two teams who can't quite say that, though, are Blackpool and Exeter. What an away day this is for Exeter supporters. Just a 9-hour round trip, at least it's a bank holiday, I suppose. Blackpool 20th, a place and 2 points above the relegation zone, and 21st placed Exeter. And Sam, they're finding a bit of form. Was that inevitable? Just a chance for me to say that one more time. Unbeaten in three, won two of those, and in dramatic fashion against Burton last time out.
Yeah, it's funny. I think, you know, looking in from the outside, it maybe feels like he just needs to keep them in the division this year before starting to implement, which we know is a pretty unique style of play that he's enjoyed success with at Barrow and Bolton. Obviously, it went a little bit awry towards the end of his time there. But I think we'll see it probably next season if they are to survive. And again, looking at the 11 that they put out, I mean, pre-season we definitely had them top six. I can't recall exactly where we would have pitched them, but they were basically comparable to the business that Huddersfield were doing. And again, I'm looking at, you know, some of the names, vast experience, Brown in midfield, Honeyman, Fletcher up front, Hickway at the back, the goal scorer CJ Hamilton from the weekend. I could go on. I mean, these are all guys that have played at higher levels and play consistently well at this level and beyond. So I'm still scratching my head as to why they're in this position. The game at the weekend, I had half an eye on it, was dreadful, decided by a really nice goal ultimately by CJ Hamilton. So yeah, 3 wins in 4 at home. And they play Posh and Orient after this Exeter game. So I think salvation will be found from these home games. They've found the form away from home. Awful. Only Rotherham, fewer points. 13 points they've had on the road. And with that group of players and with the manager that they've now got at the helm, that's got to improve in the remaining games and next season if they're going to get to where I'm sure the hierarchy want them to be. I just wanted to mention Steve Thompson as well, not a chap that I know, but I think a bit of a legend in those parts. He went back in as first team coach or assistant coach before this upturn in form, and they've had 2 clean sheets in the last 3. They'd had 2 in the previous 15. I would suggest that, yeah, maybe getting a extra voice, a bit of additional help on the training ground, especially someone maybe to shore them up defensively, has been a bit of a masterstroke as well.
it's not quite a straight shootout between these two teams, Clarke, because a few sides still in bother. But to my mind, there's only one relegation place to be decided, isn't there? I mean, there's, what, 9 points between Rotherham and safety. So this is huge. And Exeter, not won since the 24th of Jan. No new manager bounce from the not that inter interim. No goals in four of the last five. Tell me how they can stay up.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure they can, really, or they will. One sort of big positive is that they've got a goal scorer, haven't they, in Jaden Wareham. 16 goals this season. I mean,
when he said he had goals written all over him.
Yeah, exactly. Next closest is five at Exeter, so they've really relied on him. He's the third top scorer in the league, and they're in the drop zone. They've also got one of the most creative players in the league, in statistically anyway, in Ilmari Niskanen, 10 assists. Next closest to Exeter is four, and he's fourth in the league in terms of making goals. He plays on the right side, either as a sort of wing back or a right winger. So look, they've got those two players that can deliver in product. But yeah, I mean, when we talked about who might get drawn in, I did pick Exeter, and I think they were kind of almost mid-table at the time, but bad fixtures, bad run of form, and their away run has been dreadful. They've lost three and drawn one of the last four, letting at least two in all of them. And the draw definitely felt like a loss because they were winning 3-1 at Peterborough and conspired to draw that one 3-3. So yeah, look, I suppose Matt Taylor would have said, right, we stopped the rot. 0-0 draw against Orient last time out. You know, we've got something to build on, but this is a high-pressure game. You know, if they lose to Blackpool open up that gap, and suddenly they might feel a little bit adrift. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. And they might have to go in without their keeper. He didn't play the last game, Joe Whitworth. They had to draft in the understudy who hadn't really played much. I think he'd been at Swindon before. So, yeah, so not a good run at all for Exeter, and they're the team that are the ones with zero momentum. So this is the ideal game on Friday to change that momentum. But yeah, a lot will rest probably on those two guys that I mentioned.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're set ahead of this weekend, but I was speaking to an Exeter fan a couple of weeks ago, and he said basically the back three have all been out. I know Sweeney plays right at the three, and I think he's available at the moment, the captain, but I think it's Ed Turns and Fitzwater, if memory serves. They were the two that played well in the derby game that I covered earlier in the season. So I think, you know, that's obviously had a bit of an impact as well defensively. Yeah. Matt might have to play. Not you, Matt Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, he'd definitely be better than me. There's no doubt about that. League Two, we're going for Salford against Notts County. Notts occupy the final automatic promotion place. Salford at six, 3 points behind the Magpies ahead of their meeting on Friday. They're in good form as well, aren't they, Sam Carl Robinson's side? Won five of their last six, weirdly, after losing five of the previous six. Edged out MK last weekend. We've been talking for ages about when are they finally going to get out of this division. Maybe it's this season.
Yeah. Looks to be doing a good job. Carl Robinson, you'll recall that I bumped into him a few weeks ago, and a couple of the lads that he mentioned to me that have been very, very good haven't been featuring. Callum Cisse, I think they signed from Wildstone. He's been out since the end of January, and looking at the team, it's a lot of experience in there all of a sudden. And I know that's maybe been Salford's way, you know, kind of stockpiling people that have done it maybe at a higher level. But it does feel like a slightly different campaign they've experienced this year. But all of a sudden, a lot of lads, you know, Butcher getting the goal at the weekend, Stockton's back amongst it, Udo, I think, laid that one off for the winning goal against MK Dons. These are guys that are, you know, tried and tested in the EFL. I think also as well, thinking back to that chat, defenders have returned. Aluwo, he was missing for a vast number of games. All of a sudden, they're keeping clean sheets, four clean sheets in the last six, only conceded two goals in that time. So I think that tells the story, really. You know, this is a team that creates certainly vast amounts of chances, second highest XG, second for big chances, third touches in the box. Maybe the conversion rate hasn't been where they'd want it. But yeah, I think shoring things up at the opposite end has certainly proved pivotal across the last few weeks. And in comparison to what Clark is going to say, I'm sure at some point about Notts County, not reliant on one or two blokes, Salford. This is a share across the midfield, the defenders chipping in for goals. This is no one scored more than eight. So I think a really good creative team with balance, but they can share the goals out, and they're going to come up against a very good Notts County side who, I think I was saying this 12 months ago, have certainly got in Jatta, one of my top marksmen in the division, and Dennis alongside him as well. Very, very productive. So this should be a really good game, and two teams, I'm sure, that are going to have a big say in promotion one way or another. Not really going to fancy that top three now.
Yeah, the Dennis and Jatta show often for them. They recovered from losing at Oldham to win at Harrogate. Jatta got both of those. They're decent on the road as well, Clarkie, right? Won three of their last four away from home.
Well, they score goals, don't they? And if you score goals home and away, then you've got a chance, haven't you? Yeah, 7-9 for Jatta. It can frustrate you, by the way. I don't think he's the perfect centre forward, is he? His touch is a bit off. He's a bit ungainly at times, but he gets goals. And it's like, will he play one? Or would he play both together? That is often a sort of dilemma in these bigger games. And they haven't done great. Just a little word of warning, and Notts County fans will know this. They've only won once away to a team that's in the top 10 at the moment this season. So, you know, a few draws, a few defeats, just the one win away to the best teams in the division. So this is a tough game for them. Was the 3-0 battering at Oldham a one-off blip, or was there something a little bit more deep-rooted than that? We'll find out, won't we, over the coming weeks. But look, yeah, look, they're a great passing team. No one's more patient than them. No one makes more passes. They control games. They score goals. But even though they've improved in terms of their sort of naivety, they're a tougher, mentally stronger outfit than they were before. You know, are they going to be good enough to handle Salford City away from home? If they show that they are here, then they've got a great chance of top three. But I think this is going to be a really tough game for them. Really hard test.
Always the time of this season where so much seems to get sorted out. Good Friday and Easter Monday. Really looking forward to the action. All right, closing off today, we're going to have a look at some of these crazy managerial moves. Roy Hodgson in at Bristol City. What a world. 78 years young, in for 7 games, starting at Charlton on Friday. Bristol City aren't going up or going down. He says he was bored. He says he can't do it full time. They hope to have a new sporting director in soon. Sam, make it make sense.
It's really difficult, especially after watching pretty much the entirety of the press conference, where I don't think Roy knew too much about their current situation, to say the least. I'll start by saying I love Roy Hodgson, and I've probably seen more of Crystal Palace at Sellers Park than any other side since I've retired. So I'm very well versed in what his team can do, and also the certain limitations. But I've got so much respect for him. Love listening to him. But it does make me think about that spell when he went into Watford. You know, that seems to have been forgotten a little bit. I've not made that up, have I? You two are looking at me quizzically.
No, he did. He got a lot of stick, didn't he, from the Watford fans going over to the Palace fans when Watford had got relegated.
Yeah, and there wasn't much love lost, I don't think, in latter years between those two. They had a playoff final as well, didn't they? And they had mascot gate. Do you remember the mascot was body popping?
I can't remember him at Watford. Yeah.
I presume Harry the Hornet is the Watford mascot, was his quote.
There you go. So what do I make of it? I thought, actually, once I'd got over the initial shock, that it made a little bit of sense to me that, you know, even if he's teaching the lads good habits, get them obviously set up well for next season for the new manager to come in. But, you know, listening to him in that press conference, it doesn't feel like it's going to be kind of that role that maybe I was imagining, you know, that he was going to be a really good sounding board for the hierarchy, and that, you know, he was going to say where the squad's limitation was. It was almost as if, oh, you know what, it's 5 weeks. I'm a little bit bored. Just come in. I wouldn't mind being back on the grass, improving players. I'm not sure you're going to be able to get your teeth into too much over that short space of time. So it does feel really bizarre, but that's not me having a go at him, because he's an absolute legend at a game, and you wish him really well. But it could be quite difficult to watch, can it, if he's not fully invested in the future of the club.
I just don't see why they couldn't have just stuck with Struber. He wasn't going to take them up. They're not going down. They could have just stuck with him to the end of the season and then made that change. Don't really get it. It wasn't as if it was disastrous. I didn't think Struber's decision-making in games was very good. The games that I covered live for Bristol City, I was looking at his changes, his subs, and thinking, what's he doing? Not sure about that. But I know that Bristol City fans, you know, a lot of them didn't think he was bad at all. So, yeah, odd choice, I think, from the club. But we wish Roy the best. impressed.
It'd be nice to see Ray Lewington in his shorts on the touchline. Presumably he's going in. I haven't checked that, but you can't really have one without the other, can you? I'm not sure it's possible. No. Lee Clark in at Rotherham. Not managed in England since a spell with non-league Blyth Spartans came to an end in March 2020. His most recent posts were in Oman and Sudan. Lost his first game 3-0 at Lincoln, fair enough. They host Stevenage, then go to Port Vale. As I mentioned, Clarkie, 9 points from safety. I mean, again, make it make sense.
Yeah, look, it's a very sort of left field one. I think I'm going to pat myself on the back. I think I said Matt Hampshire was on his way out at Rotherham. So that one came to fruition. I mean, you didn't need to be, you know, brains of Britain to get that one right. They were on a bad run, weren't they? And what I will say about this run of games that Lee Clark has got between now and the end of the season is they've only lost to one of the teams that they're playing, and that was Stevenage. The others, they picked up points in the reverse fixtures. They've added up the points. They got 13 points off of their upcoming opponent. If they can replicate that, they'll stay up. They won't, won't they? They've got a couple of games in hand as well. So it's not all lost, but it feels like a vibes appointment, doesn't it? I mean, I don't really know Lee Clark. He seems like a good lad, but having been out of the game that long, they're just hoping that he's going to put smiles on faces and put his arm around them and G them up a bit, isn't he? Aren't they? So let's see. But as I said, they've got experience of getting results against the teams that they're going to face between now and the end of the season.
Maybe vibes the reason for Colin Kazim Richards coming in at Crawley. Won his first game 2-0 against Gillingham, thanks to two stoppage time goals. Means they're 2 points above the bottom two. Had been coaching at Arsenal's academy, replaces Scott Lindsay, who'd gone 10 without a win. Very simple question on this one for both of you. According to Wikipedia, how many clubs did Colin Kazim Richards play for? Sam, you can have the first guess.
I'll go 21.
21,
it was a good few, wasn't it? Surely that's too many.
I was thinking 18. I played for 14, I think.
Did you? Yeah.
Taking the time to 18, have a little look.
18, but I reckon there's at least five or six different countries in there.
The answer is 13, but yeah, there's all sorts of countries in there and 37 caps for Turkey as well. Bury, Brighton, Sheffield United, Fenerbahce, Toulouse loan, Galatasaray, Olympiakos loan, Blackburn loan, Bursaspor, Feyenoord loan, Feyenoord Perm, Celtic, Curitiba, Corinthians, Lobos Buap loan, Veracruz, Pachuca, Derby County, Boo, and Fatih Karagümrük. Sorry to...
It's got to be more than 13 that you read out there. That's something... There's a lot of long names then.
Yeah, it is more than 13, isn't it? Yeah, it's like 15. Grady GCSE maths doing for me there, but nobody got it right anyway. I tell you what, though, speaking of things that did go pretty right, how about our predictions? Just the two perfect scores for me last time out. Annoyingly, Sam did pretty well too. So it was 6 points for me, 5 points for Sam, and 2 points for Adrian. Has that closed the gap much?
Look, it's made it competitive. So you're still a bit adrift, 47. Sam's on 57. And I am treading water on 62. Sam is absolutely within striking distance now of stealing this year's predictions title, which would be a little bit heartbreaking for me and embarrassing, really.
I mean, funny, some would say, given the amount of crowing that's been going on, but we shall see. Long way to go. Let's start with Friday's games then. Leicester against Preston is the championship pick I've gone for. Go on then, Clarkie, you've got to get back on the horse. You can go first.
I mean, Leicester have to win, don't they? Preston aren't very good at the moment. I think they will get the win, but I can't say they'll get it with a clean sheet. So I'm going to go Leicester 2, Preston 1.
1-1 for me. Sam?
No, I'm all with Clarkie. I fancy them strongly here, and I think Stoke got that win. Preston got that much needed win against Stoke, didn't they? So I'm going for Leicester and Leicester to win well, 3-1.
Oof, crikey. Doncaster, Mansfield up next. Not really a derby, but not that far between them. Sam, what do you reckon?
I have very, very little that I feel strong about here. Doncaster, there's not many goals in their games. Both of them are on decent runs. I can't get the punters excited here. 1-1. Stinks of it.
I'm going to say 2-2. Two red cards, six bookings. Clarkie?
I had 1-1 for all of the reasons outlined, but I'll change it because you're both going for draws. I go for a home win. Donny 1, Mansfield 0.
Nice. And last of all, Newport Crawley. That's a biggie as well, isn't it? I think that it's all going to come crashing down for CKR, and it's going to be a Fuchs and great win for the hosts. 2-0. Adrian?
Vibesville. I'm all over the vibes. He's going to get back-to-back three-pointers. Newport, who are very inconsistent. Win one, lose one, win one, lose one. Newport 0, Crawley 1.
Sam?
I think there's vibes at Newport, you know, and I just think they've been there, haven't they? They've done it before. See the Bobby Camera goal the other day. That's been, I don't know how, but every time I come into one of the rooms in my house, one of my boys is watching the highlights of that Newport game. it's either stuck on YouTube or they've had the DFL highlights on a constant cycle. But yeah, there's some vibes about them. I'm kind of with you here, Matt. I think the real challenge could hit home after that relegation 6 point at Newport 2. Crawley won.
Okay. It was 18 clubs that Colin Kazim Richards had played for, I'm afraid. So you win, Clarkie.
Yeah,
hopefully that's a good omen for you, predictions wise. Before we finish with that,
didn't you get that wrong?
I don't know.
I got laughed out of town for being three out.
I know. Yeah, I've had a shocker. That's all I can say. I apologise, everybody. Before we do tweet of the week, another reminder of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus and new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Tweet of the week, pretty thin gruel, I'd have to say, this time around. I've gone for one from the aforementioned Crawley's Addy Addy Yamo, quote tweeting the official account, as is the style. They said, "Get in there," all caps with someone blowing wind emoji, hashtag town team together, red circle emoji in it. Picture of some scenes of happiness from the victory against Gillingham, and Addy, or Ads as he's known on X, formerly known as Twitter, simply says, "We keep," and then all caps, "pooshing," and a muscly arm emoji. I don't like pooshing, Sam. It sounds like he's got intestinal issues.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. We don't know if there's an in joke. Maybe he was late out for the second half or something. Who knows? But he certainly finished off his goal very nicely, kissed the inside of the post. But yeah, I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
No, I'm not a fan, Clarky.
No, but not really. No, pooshing is a bit weird, isn't it? But first reply, Charlie Rogers, "Just run, man. You're rapid. Why do you keep passing?" So he's just rubbing, you know. It's an unrelated criticism from Charlie Rogers, which is, feels a bit harsh, just sort of rubbing his nose in it a little bit. They've just won the game. Crying out loud. Be positive.
Just one like for that, though. Right, that's where we're going to leave things for today. If you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever get your pods, all helps us grow the show. We would appreciate it greatly. We shall be back at some point next week to talk about all the ups, downs, and whys and wherefores of this fascinating Easter weekend. Until then, though, it's thanks to Sam and Adrian and to you for listening. For now, it's goodbye.